Welcome, everyone. This is the ad hoc committee. Oh, we have microphones. We don't usually have microphones. This is the ad hoc committee on governance. My name is John Butler. I chair this committee, and I'm happy to have everybody here with us today. May I ask that the roll be called, please?
Trustee Robert Bowie. Trustee Robert Marshall.
Here.
Trustee Mark Strauss.
Here.
Trustee Tim Struthers.
Here.
Committee Chair John Butler.
Here. Mr. Blakemore, can you verify there is a quorum and that we have posted an appropriate notification of the meeting?
Mr. Chair, I can verify that we have both a quorum and that the meeting has been called pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act.
Thank you very much. We have an agenda before us. May I have a motion to approve that agenda?
So moved.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none, the agenda is approved. I have sent to the committee draft minutes from the prior meeting of December 17, 2015, and I believe we've been provided a printed copy of those. Since that draft, we have made a change on the first page on the bottom where it says that Mr. Heckman noted that Vice President Alan Phillips was able to be present for the meeting. It should say he was not able to be present for the meeting. That change has been made to the document in front of you, so that's what I'm proposing that we accept today. May I have a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none, the minutes of December 17, 2015 are approved. This is the place in the meeting where the chair has an opportunity to provide some comments and make some announcements. I want to move, if we can, quickly to the issues that we are considering today. And I want to preface that by saying that we've got quite a responsibility that is before us, which is to deal with a vacancy in the student trustee position that was not planned and was not on our list of things to do. But it is an awesome responsibility and one that I'm very pleased that this committee has been charged with. And I look forward to that, to the opportunity to talk more on that subject. But this is also the time in which we welcome members of the University Advisory Committee, and we have Greg Long here. Is there anything you'd like to say at this time?
Not at this time, no. Thank you.
And Holly Nicholson. Holly, is there anything you'd like to say at this time?
Oh, I just want to say thank you for your support of the constitutional reform, and I'm looking forward to working on that in any way I can. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for your interest and work in that as well. We'll be learning more about that from Dr. Long later in the meeting. I'm aware that there is one person who we've asked to come and speak and who's asked to come and speak, and that is Nathan Loopstein, who is president of the Student Association. Are there any other people who have asked to speak to the committee? In that case, Nathan, may I ask that you come to the table? There's a spot here next to Dr. Phillips where you will use that microphone to address the committee.
Thanks, John. Thank you all for having me. I appreciate being here. I want to preface all my statements by saying that the Student Association and myself are very grateful for everyone at this table's commitment to our student experience here and your continued support and collaboration with the Student Association. So with that being said, like John mentioned, we have a unique situation in front of us, but it turns out it hasn't been all that unique throughout the course of time. So I'm going to give a rough framework about how this student trustee's position and Board of Regents position has evolved over time. Kind of illustrate to you all that to move forward and urge you to consider this piece of legislation that's in front of you. So Back in 1967, the Board of Regents was established to exercise governance of Illinois, different state universities. So they had a Board of Regents overseeing multiple state universities. In 1973, there was a non-voting student member added to this Board of Regents. So they were privy to all confidential information. They were able to make motions, second them, and whatnot, and they sat on this Board of Regents. So then in 1996 is when the Board of Regents was actually dissolved, and the state universities had their own individual student Board of Trustees. So that is when we had our own Board of Trustees as a Northern Illinois University, and that's when that process began. So following that, the way that the student trustee position worked was that the student association president, so someone that was acting within my capacity back in 1996, would have the authority to appoint a student trustee upon Senate confirmation to sit on the board along with all the other trustees. Again, privy to all the same information, being able to motion and second different things in the meeting and have the same stating and speaking rights as all the other trustees. So, moving forward to 1997, so 1996 was the first time that the SA president appoints the first NIU student trustee. And then moving forward in 1997, there's some issues of governance in the state where state universities are pushing to get this student trustee a legally binding vote. There's some contention with it. There's some universities that are rallying together to make sure that this student trustee has a legally binding vote. And then finally in 1999, the law grants that the student trustee gets a legally binding vote just as any other member of the Board of Trustees. So 1999 is when that vote is granted. So from this point forward, the procedure of the SA president's nomination and Senate confirmation still remains intact. So even with a legally binding vote, we have this, we see the student association president here at Northern Illinois University having the authority to appoint a student trustee and even under the provision that they have a legally binding vote. So they appoint a trustee, and then the student senate of 40 people will go ahead and confirm them. And we're familiar with this process, too, as a student association, because any of our executive officers, any of our executive cabinet, including myself, work probably weekly about going through this confirmation process. We have a lot of appointments that we have to make, and we go in front of the Senate and seek their approval for these candidates. So they go through a pretty strenuous vetting process, and we scrutinize each candidate very heavily. So this is a regular practice that we've been very comfortable with since, essentially, you know, the last 20 years. So what happens in around October 1999 is somewhat close to what we're dealing with today. So in October 1999, there's an SA president and trustee who is impeached and removed from office. So this vacancy of the trustee needed to be filled. So back in October, the then president, John LaTourette, actually wrote the essay and asked to inform him of a student designee that they are going to appoint to the board. So that process is fulfilled. The essay president makes an appointment. They appoint Nolan Davis. He is appointed. The Senate confirms him, and 4 days later, he's sworn into office with a legally binding vote. And we see that this happens about three times, where the essay has been able to appoint a student trustee to the board, confirmed by the Senate, and give them a legally binding vote. So in 2001, this is where we see this process of an appointment and confirmation kind of dissolved. This is when we see a campus-wide election for the selection of the student trustee be put into place. So that is when we see this dynamic kind of shift. So now that's been our practice since 2001. Now in January, we are in a vacancy again, similar to the point that we had back in the fall of 1997. There's no guidance or practice, as we're aware, to how to replace the student vacancy within this board, but common practice shows over the last 20 or 30 years that this is how we have gone about it in the past, and the circumstances haven't been all that different. We're still appointing to a vacancy where there is a student trustee that sits at this board with a legally binding vote and is privy to all the information that every other trustee is privy to as well. So with that being said, I think there's a compelling case to state that the procedure in front of you today is something that we can move forward with in confidence. We see it as a regular practice of Northern Illinois University, and it's the cornerstone of what we believe in the SA to be shared governance that the Northern Illinois University and the Board of Trustees has supported since its induction back in the 1960s. So I would encourage all of you to seriously consider this recommendation, and we on the student side and the student body would be very appreciative of having the student trustee representing our interests with all of you throughout the coming months.
Thank you, Nathan. Do any of the committee members have any questions for Nathan? I would just want to clarify, you said that this has happened about three times. What's happened about three times is the SA president and the student senate has appointed a voting trustee.
Right.
And that would be, given the fact that it was 1999, that would have been in 99, again in 99, and in 2000.
Right.
And then new law was passed that provided for the fact that the student trustees of all of the public colleges and universities would be an elected role. And so in 2001, that's when the first student trustee is selected by the campus.
Yes, the student body, through popular election.
Okay. Any other questions for Nathan? Nathan, are you going to be around for the whole meeting?
Yeah, I'm going to try to be.
Okay. Well, we may have some more questions for you later.
Sure.
And in between now and then, I'm sorry that you have to go through the various tasks of this group that don't relate to this subject, but your input is very valuable. Thank you. Okay, that concludes the comment period, and now we move to the university report. The first item is a discussion of proposed amendments related to commodities and sponsored projects authorization levels. It's an information item that we're going to be discussing today. I'm going to turn the floor over to Mr. Blakemore.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is actually an item for discussion by our Vice President and for Finance and Administration. I almost said Vice President and General Counsel. So, Dr. Phillips.
So, this issue came about as. This is an issue that came to the board's attention a few months ago. We had a computer purchase that was scheduled to be approved as a result of board policies that currently exist because we were purchasing the computers off of the IPHEC contract, and in the board policy it states that purchases of commodities off of the IPHEC contract do not have to go to the board. Computers, per their definition, are considered commodities. The concern was that a purchase of that magnitude, even though a commodity, there was concern among the board members that that was going to take place without appropriate levels of board approval. As a result, we took a look at our existing policy and have a recommendation to make changes in the policy that essentially would remove IPHEC contracts from the list of those procurements that do not have to go to the board, and that we would look at a number of specific types of procurements, regardless of the source of the procurement, that would be delegated to the president level of approval and would not need to come before the board. This proposed amendments changes the board policy that removes IPHEC from the approval level at the president level, but adds back in a couple of items that were included under the IPHEC contract that still would be approved at the president level. And the second part of this is dealing with the sponsored award approvals.
The Al, if you need me to chime in on this,
I will defer to the provost on this one, since this is more in her area of expertise.
Dr. Blasey asked me if I could be here to support questions in case they came up, so pardon me for interrupting, but this is a subject that's very near and dear to my heart as the former vice president for research. Subrecipient agreements that occur under sponsored projects are essentially flow-through funding, and our board requirement that subrecipient grant agreements be subject to board approval has, at the threshold of $250,000, has been a real problem for our faculty who are trying to do research and scholarship, in the sense that the grants come in when they come in. The opportunity sometimes, because of an extension, a no-cost extension, or the availability of additional funds to NIU, comes up not on a schedule that's commensurate with the board meeting schedule. And for the researchers or scholars to meet the deadline that they've committed to the federal funding agency, they need to be able to move forward and do the work, not subject to the board meeting schedule. There have been a couple of instances during my tenure at NIU where funds were put on the table and then taken off because of our inability to meet the deadline, thus impairing a researcher's ability to be productive and endangering the reputation of the university. And there is at least one group of researchers who generally collaborate with other institutions, among whom NIU had gotten a reputation of being hard to work with because of this requirement, so that our own researchers were advocating not to be the leads, but rather than the seconds. I think that, you know, through cooperation with the board, we've been able to get to a better place, but really to function in the competitive world of sponsored projects and to be a good collaborator in a world where collaboration across institutions is more common, exempting this type of flow-through from board approval, considering the unique contractual nature of the endeavors and their importance to the university research, is a very intelligent and, thing to do that will help our faculty.
Trustee Strauss.
I'd like to thank Al for following up on the prior discussions that we had, and I'm glad that the timing allows us to also consider the modification required by our research and sponsored project operation. I want to remind my colleagues that the section that's before us today for consideration is part of a larger set of provisions that relate to purchasing decisions. There are other restrictions that continue in effect even for the transactions here that would be exempt based on dollar amount exclusively, to the extent that they had unusual contractual provisions or caused some sort of additional scrutiny based on public input, et cetera. So this is something that we've been wrestling with now for upwards of a year. And I think that we've, at least based on the types of situations that we currently know about, found a reasonable accommodation.
Thank you. Are there other members of the committee that want to speak on this? There are a few things I want to say as well. I would just add that the sponsored projects matter is almost verbatim the same wording that we considered about a year and a half ago. When the board first considered some changes in this area, it seemed an appropriate time to bring it back. But in addition to that, a year and a half ago process whereby no one on the board had any concerns with this particular measure, the board's action item of May 28, 2015, whereby the board as a whole indicated that it wished to look at particular areas of interest where changes to bylaws, regulations, and policy concerning board and presidential contracting included as the third area of interest. And I'll read it verbatim. It's the adoption of provisions that would govern procurement expenditures for sponsored research and other sponsored activities under grants and contracts to promote efficiency and timely project administration. So the board has been heard on this subject. There is an interest in this type of change that relates to this particular area of the university, and I just want to make sure that we are made aware of that and reminded of that fact. So I think as we consider this as an information item, I just want to give you that background as well. Are there other questions, concerns, interest areas? Then we'll move to the next item, which is also an information item. Let me lead into this just a bit, if I can, and then I'll turn it over to Mr. Blakemore. This concerns bylaws and constitutional and regulation reform that is occurring primarily at the level of the University Council and the Faculty Senate. We heard a briefing on this subject at our last meeting. And at that briefing, if I can summarize where we determined we would be on this subject, give me just a second. For the record, I indicated that Dr. Long would be seeking to amend the bylaws with fewer votes, and that would be the first step that would permit a long-term effort to change the composition of the Constitution and deal with a number of issues that the Faculty Senate and the University Council and the other councils have been dealing with. Then we would be seeing an inventory of documents that may be in conflict, may contain inefficiencies, and we would also in that process compare our structure to other potential frameworks and structures. And then we're going to prioritize the policies for reform, and we would then also identify areas for reform. I think that's really where we would come in as a board, but we're going to hear an update from Dr. Long today as to how things are going with the first phases of this project. And I believe you had a milestone yesterday.
Yes, we did. Yesterday we did have our first reading in University Council, and the reading was to change the voting threshold for to reduce it to 60% of the entire body plus one, and then of those people who were there, then two-thirds of them could make a change to a bylaw. So that represents a significant change. I want to thank Professor Arado, Teresa Arado, who's the chair of our Rules, Governance, and Election Committee. She's worked well with her committee to vet this with them and have some discussion on it. When we had our meeting yesterday, we had a lively discussion, I think. It was a positive discussion. Needless to say, there are some people who, you know, have hesitations on it, but I was more gratified to see that some of the major people, faculty and other people who are seen as having a lot of integrity, a lot of influence, stood up and said, I think this is a valuable thing to do. So we got a lot of good positive support from that. So from the standpoint of, you know, our first effort to seek to amend the bylaws, we've had our first reading. The second reading will be next month on November the 2nd. Working very hard to make sure we get out enough people because, from my standpoint, attendance is an issue. But we've already met with representatives from the Student Association, and we're meeting with and doing individual meetings even with the students from the advisory committee so that everyone knows kind of what's going on. They have the opportunity to ask questions and really recognize the importance of showing up. The second thing that Trustee Butler mentioned was our inventory of documents. And I apologize, I only have 10 copies of these. But what we've done, we've got a graduate assistant, and he and I worked together and basically looked at the Constitution and bylaws of all of our, you know, respective governing documents, and the left-hand column of this identifies what the different topics are. And then going across the top, you've got our respective documents, and you'll quickly see, for example, that there are certain articles, for example, that are repeated multiple times. So looking at Article 10, the amendment procedures, if you would, we've got four different versions of that. And again, that may be appropriate, but from the standpoint of at least knowing where information is and being able to compare the differences, that's really one of our initial goals to that. So once we get a little more verification on this table that we're all comfortable with it, the other thing that we're doing is going through and across, if you go across, so if we look at amendment procedures, for example, there are four different entries for that. So I just quickly, you know, did a cut and paste of, okay, this is what it says for amendment procedures for the Constitution, here's what it says for the bylaws, here's what it says for Faculty Senate, and here's what it says for BOT regs. Bylaws, excuse me. Again, just as a way of kind of gathering some information, the table you have is the skeleton. This will provide a lot more of the meat to how we look at and compare things across. Greg Brady and I have talked a couple of times, doing some outreach to get input on other universities that have strong traditions of shared governance. That's still in process, but when we do that, what we hope to gain from that is to basically look at their documents and see what typical constitutional bylaws include and compare them to ours. We did a very rough review of that, and it is exactly as you would expect. We have far, far, far more many bylaws than the other five institutions I've done a comparison with so far. And wanting to put all this information together because I think there are a lot of people on University Council and even just among faculty in general who don't appreciate a lot of the subtleties of what we're trying to do here. And to want to create a bit of a white paper, if you would, make it short, but to say here are the specifics on our attendance, here's, you know, basically making the argument for why we need to look at this. And so that's going to be something that I'll be putting together and be happy to share. Because, again, with all this, we recognize very significantly that we have to work up as well as down. So it's not just the University Council and the councils that feed into that, but we recognize the Board of Trustees, bylaws, and regulations take precedence. So throughout this whole process, we're wanting to make sure that everything we do is communicate with you, and if there's any issues, concerns, conflicts, that gets dealt with right up front. So that's where we are right now. I'm cautiously optimistic, please, that our vote happens in the way we want it to next month. If it doesn't, we'll probably have to come back and have another discussion and think about alternatives. But if it does go forward, then that's a different discussion as well. So I'm hoping that we get the vote and our support. Any questions? Can I answer anything?
Trustee Strother.
Just curious, you mentioned last time about the numbers, right, that you had to have.
Uh-huh.
The number was what?
Right now we have 62 members, and so we have to have, for a bylaw amendment change, you have to have 42 affirmative votes.
Right.
And our attendance figure is about 45 people.
So how many people were in attendance yesterday?
See, since we're pushing it, yesterday was a good day. We had 50, a little over 50.
Okay,
which was
great.
But that is, in my review of attendance patterns over the last X number of years, that's a peak. So that was really nice, and I'm hoping that if we get that same kind of turnout for March, and I'm shaking the bushes, rest assured,
sure.
That I think we have a decent chance.
Great. Thank you.
Other questions from the committee? Trustee Strauss?
I really have a comment instead of a question. I understand what's happening and applaud the effort and hope that you continue to have some success. The important thing from our perspective is the comment that you made about trying to also look up, and we need to, I think, be prepared to contemplate the issues that require guidance from our side as well. We don't currently have an infrastructure to do that or a set of meetings planned to be able to determine which issues we believe are important and we want to carry in the other direction. I'd like to make a suggestion that we do something to make sure that we can be accommodative on the scheduling and deliberative about the sort of input that we want to be able to provide.
Yeah, I think that's important. We've got some areas where we want to look at as well. We
Absolutely.
Want to make sure that we don't come to you after you've done all your work and then said, you know, now
right.
you have to consider what we want to change. So we'll have to make sure that we're working with you. I'm glad to hear that you've been working with Greg Brady. That was something that the committee requested would happen at the last meeting. And in general, are you dealing with any opposition at this point?
There is, I mean, In a large scale, no. And on isolated instances, of course. And so, for example, during our meeting yesterday, you know, we had one, and it was interesting. I mean, it's a good perspective, but, you know, a math professor said, okay, so if we take two-thirds of this and one-third of this, and it boils down to, so does that mean 24 people could make decisions? Well, in theory, yes, but if we look at how we operate over time, you know, we have a good attendance patterns, and we, you know, when we don't pass things, they're typically not passed by, like, a vote or two. It's not like we typically have really strong, you know, divisions or are people going rogue on us, for example. So I think that the general sense is I'm cautiously optimistic, you know, that I think that, again, we get the vote. I'm doing everything I can to communicate, educate, and be really transparent with this process.
Mr. Blakemore, you have been involved in this process for quite some time. Did you want to add anything? I'm not saying you should, but did you want to?
I'll add two very quick points, and they really underscore comments that have been made. When this committee originally initiated this effort, there was a consensus amongst the committee that the review would be comprehensive. It would be the Constitution and the related documents that relate to the Constitution, and I won't name them. What the General Counsel's office has done, and I want to say a special thanks to Greg Brady, but also to Dr. Long, is we provided a briefing for a number of people that Dr. Long put together on here are the documents that are of relevance to sort of this discussion. So that has been done. The second part that I think is an ongoing part, but it's really an education of the general of the university community about what our Constitution, bylaws, regulations are. So that process has begun. And the focus to date has been on process as opposed to the substance. In the future, particularly given the comments that were made earlier, there will be recommendations that will come from the board, from the university council, et cetera. But the intent was to make it comprehensive as opposed to, with the exception of addressing the voting issue, which is very critical. We did want to have a process that brought us to comprehensive review and reform. So those are the only comments that I will add, other than part of the purpose, and we see this in this document, is to streamline the process to make it clear, so provide some clarity, but also to eliminate duplication. And even more important than eliminating duplication is eliminating inconsistencies between the various documents. So that's a big part of what this effort ultimately will do, and obviously a major purpose.
Thank you. Are there any other comments or questions from anybody at the table on this process? Dr. Baker?
I'll just make one comment very quickly. I thought it was an excellent discussion, and Dr. Long did a great job leading the discussion. I appreciate the hard work that went into getting us there. When the question was raised about, well, what if no faculty showed up and then, you know, other people could make decisions, it was just a wonderful moment when a student said, well, if you're elected, shouldn't you show up?
Do your job.
And do your job. And it kind of changed the tone of the conversation. So students are making a big contribution to the University Council in helping shape the conversation. So I thought it was a wonderful moment. And everybody kind of laughed about it, but it did change the tone a little bit.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So it was a great conversation, very positive.
And we have the president of the Student Association here today, and so you can witness and know that this committee of the Board of Trustees not only talked about this extensively on December 17th, but also had this update here. And I think the message is that we're very supportive of this effort.
Thank you.
And anything that we can do to help, you know, help to move this along and overcome the barriers, please.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the support, and I think we've got a core group of people who are very motivated to see this happen. So it's, yeah, I'm pushing it, but Therese, George Slotsky, a lot of us really think that there's some great value in this. And again, during yesterday's meeting, that, you know, a few department chairs spoke up, other people spoke up, and that also seemed to kind of sway how people looked at it. So I'm very hopeful and look forward to working together with the committee.
Thank you very much. So we'll move then to the next item, which is an action item. And this is a university recommendation. It's an action item. I will direct your attention to page 5 of the meeting packet titled Student Trustee Vacancy and Proposed Bylaw Change. It's item 8A. What essentially this item seeks to do is to adopt the process that's in the current SA Constitution for the management of a vacancy in the student trustee position. The university seeks the approval to adopt the principles contained in the SA Constitution regarding the student trustee vacancy, and also the approval of a proposed amendment to Article 2, Section 7 of the bylaws of the Board of Trustees of NIU. And if approved, this item will be forwarded to the full board for consideration at its next full board meeting. So let me ask first if there's a motion and a second for this item. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. So let me now ask if there's any discussion. Trustee Strauss.
I'd like to ask Mr. Blakemore, since there appears to be some fuzziness in the enabling statute, whether or not you've reached an opinion as to whether the procedure that's proposed today is consistent with all of the applicable legal requirements.
Yes, and yes. I've reached a decision. I believe that the proposal that is being submitted to this body withstands legal muster, to shorten, you know, to use a cliche. There was an actual opinion issued by my office to the board regarding this, and we are more than comfortable with that opinion, and we fully support the recommendation to move forward.
Thank you. Then it's my further observation that it is important that we have a student trustee. And given the timing of the ordinary election process, where we instead have found ourselves in a position where an election was necessary, we would have had a quick duplication of the election process at expense and inconvenience to the students. So I'm glad personally that we were able to find an approach that passes legal muster and produces a result for our next regularly scheduled board meeting would produce a student representative, assuming that there's a prompt nomination and confirmation. So I appreciate that everybody took a look at this with dispatch, and I'm grateful that we have the opportunity today to be able to make a recommendation.
Okay. Are there any other comments or questions from the committee members? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none, the motion passes, and this will be forwarded to the board at its next meeting. Thank you very much for all your hard work and consideration of this issue. And Nathan, thank you for your words. You answered a number of my questions and the remarks that you gave and dramatically shortened what might have been a lengthier item. I want to just quickly mention under what gives me the right to continue to speak, next steps.
That's legally sustainable, too.
Yes, thank you. I want to remind the staff and those who are working with this committee that we haven't had a board meeting since our last meeting of this committee, and we made some commitments at that meeting. That we would forward to the board for its full consideration a disclosure of interest policy, which we discussed, and I believe that motion included directing that would also involve the removal of the current separate conflict of interest policy, and also the provision of authority to the president for the creation and implementation of an appropriate disclosure of interest policy for persons not covered by the proposed bylaw. And so that's something that we can expect in accordance with whatever schedule the chair wishes to follow, whether it be at the special meeting or the full board meeting, however that works. We also discussed a proposed administrative leave policy, and I believe that we had some requests about what that policy would contain, but ultimately the recommendation was that we would prepare a presentation to the full board, an item that would also provide to the president the authority to establish and implement an administrative leave policy at the university level. And that's my summary of the two things we talked about last time. In the past, we've usually moved from those particular motions to a full board meeting. So now we have, in fact, several items that will at some point go to the full board, not only from the last meeting, but from this meeting as well.
Mr. Chair, each of those items have been prepared, and at the at the direction of the chair, we will add them to whatever meeting of the full board that the chair, in conjunction with the other members of the board, determines. The committee has taken action on each of those. The discussions have been substantive, and it's a matter now of saying, do you want them for your next scheduled regular meeting or your next scheduled special meeting? We will be prepared to respond accordingly.
Trustee Strauss.
Perhaps I can weigh in on that. We're going to have a very full day on February 18th. The full board meeting on that day was initially added for what was going to be a very restricted agenda. And I'm concerned that if we add too much on February 18th, we won't give due consideration. We have a regular full board meeting in March, and my preference would be that these items come forward up to the full board meeting in March. It may also be that by that time, we'll have had the opportunity to be able to make further progress on the proposed scope of work that this committee has, because as I noted at our last meeting, we started with, I believe, three phases of work that we were going to complete. And I think last time I said now it had extended to 108. It may have gone from 108 at that time to 250 at this point. And while the chair and my colleagues on this committee have done a really good job of actually rolling up our sleeves and working at these sessions, I'd like to encourage us to continue to plow through that material as rapidly as we're able. These governance issues are important, and it's apparent that they had sat for 20 years without attention. So now that we have everyone engaged, it would be to our advantage to, again, take a look at what the appropriate priority is. Is the framework for establishing those priorities is maybe different today than it was when this ad hoc committee started its work. And while we can't directly take action on it, and a portion of this is at your discretion as the chair of this committee, my suggestion is that we see which of these items we can tackle next and see whether we can't get them prepared sufficiently in advance of the meeting so that the members have an opportunity to reflect on the items and we can come together and instead of receiving presentations, have some fruitful discussion about items that are proposed for action.
Thank you. I want to just as a point of clarification, you had indicated that these items would come before the board on the March 10th meeting. Your intention with the student trustee item is to raise that on the 18th?
That is correct. I was only speaking with reference to
the items I discussed.
That's correct.
Thank you. Any other next step items from anyone else on the committee? Other matters to come before the committee. We will have a next meeting date. We will make that determination with the help of Mike Mann, who works with us on those efforts, and learning of the other members of the committee and their various schedules. And you'll get that information soon, but we don't have that at this time. And so then I will ask for a motion to adjourn.
I'll make that motion.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. There's a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Seeing none, the meeting's adjourned. Thank you.